This is Tall Tale TV, your podcast for sci-fi and fantasy short stories. This story has multiple parts. To listen to the entire story in one place, visit talltaletv.com/series. Of Bandits and Bad Magic by Leslie Heron. Chapter 30, Aronia. The cold rays of early morning sunshine slid across the desolate expanse of Emberrun, creating a beautiful glow on the rolling hills of the long, dead battlefield. A bitter breeze swept around them, swirling the dust and infusing the air with the putrid scent of abandoned decay. Together they stood, far from the safety of their fort, waving a white flag in the name of peace. Pyra's gaze flickered from the gently flapping banner over to Eric, who was scratching at his neck and tugging at his sleeves. She nudged him with her elbow, hissing below her breath, "Will you stop fidgeting? It's unbecoming of a king." Snorting in protest, Eric let out a loud huff.
"Easy for you to say. You didn't have to change out of your clothes for your costume to fit."
He reached up, unable to resist the urge, and tugged at the irritable fur collar of his new ensemble. The royal garb that Bozhil had presented them with had been nothing more than simple stage costumes, garments made from thin, ornate fabrics or heavily dyed wools. Eric had been layered in the itchiest of fabrics in order to compensate for his lacking physique. Despite wearing all the trappings of a king, including a fur-lined collar and a gaudy tin crown painted gold and embedded with glass jewels, there was little room for protective armor. He tugged at his collar once more, finding himself yearning for the soft cotton of his beloved Hawaiian shirt. Pyra ignored his remark and returned her gaze towards the oncoming troops. It was true, Bozhil had presented her with a rather cheap imitation dress that she was able to wear over her normal clothes, but she was just as uncomfortable. Perhaps not so much with the clothing choices, but with their current situation. They were waving a white banner in hopes that they could talk their way out of this whole ordeal. By luck and bluff alone, the fate of the kingdom rests in their hands. In silence, they watched as no less than a dozen riders approached them. Three delegates from the neighboring kingdoms, a handful of escorts for each, and a representative from the Brotherhood stopped just out of arm's reach. Eric was just taking in the separate colors and flags of the other countries when he noticed the speaker for the Brotherhood. She was clad in a mix of armor and overflowing, regal Victorian-era fabrics. Ruffles and silks, petticoats and bows hidden just beneath her glittering ebony armor. He couldn't help the frown on his face when he felt the queen elbow him once more, and he snapped back into the moment. Stepping forward, Pyra managed a curt bow. "On behalf of Ebra, I thank you for meeting with us for negotiations. We needn't come to blows today on this famed battlefield, and our countries, our peoples, needn't suffer unnecessary losses." The three delegates exchanged a look with one another before nodding solemnly. One man with a sinister mustache moved forward and offered them a mocking gesture of a bow.
"I am Captain Sinovar, representing the great northern nation of Aethia."
Pyra pulled a smile, forcing herself to remain calm. Varen had said there may be a peaceful resolution to this conflict, and she owed it to him to try.
"Welcome, Sir Sinovar. It is my sincere hope that we may yet find a..."
Her words were trampled by the trumpeting fanfare of several soldiers circling another delegate. dressed in a brilliant display of fabrics and gold, a dark-skinned man moved forward.
I am Lord Bellamore, representing the greatest southern nation of Uharia.
Unwilling to be outdone, the third and final delegate, clad in baby blue armor, moved to the head of the line, his horse dancing angrily on the spot.
And I, Captain Lucas of Fuskar, was promised a war.
He swiveled around to glare at the other delegates before turning his attention to the queen.
As I was saying,
Pyra continued her forced smile, but her words were said through grit teeth.
It is my sincere hope that we may find a peaceful resolution. Blah, blah, blah.
The woman in black threw up her hands as she urged her horse forward. The great steed pushed between the others and came to a stop in front of the queen.
Honey, they don't give two craps about what you want.
She looked over her shoulder and shook her head.
It's not like they'll be alive long enough for it to matter anyway.
Despite the murmurs of confusion and outrage from the delegates and their soldiers, Eric found himself staring hard at the speaker for the Brotherhood. Her accent was not one of this world, but reminded him of a slow, southern drawl. He opened his mouth to inquire about this, but was stopped when the queen interjected.
And who might you be?
Shifting her shoulders back, Pyra attempted to regain her composure. Another trumpeting fanfare sounded, and a soldier of Uharia moved forward.
Introducing the Jewel of the Brotherhood.
The woman let out a long, annoyed sigh and withdrew a wooden club adorned with several spikes on the end and swung it casually into the back of the man's head, splattering it like a watermelon.
How many times have I told you not to interrupt me?
With an armored boot heel, she kicked the corpse from her weapon, dislodging the gore at the end.
Oh, hell. Look what you made me do.
She shot a disapproving glance at the delegate of Uharia, before snapping back to the meager troop before her.
I don't think it'll matter much, but you can call me Ruby.
Raising her fingers to her face, Pyra wiped the blood spatter from her cheeks. She stumbled over her words, unable to find her footing.
We feel that a peace treaty would be in everyone's best interest.
She looked past the Brotherhood figure and to the three delegates.
If you could simply lay out your demands, we would... I'm a stop you right there, princess.
Ruby leaned against her saddle, pointing the end of her club at Pyra.
You're sweet, and I like that, but sweet ain't gonna cut it out here. Besides, the betting odds are stacked in our favor, and there ain't no talking us down.
All too familiar with the terms of passive aggression, Eric set his jaw.
The odds can quickly change if you force my hand. I control the undead in this field of bones, and every soldier slain is another that fights for me.
Ruby threw her head back, belting out a shrill laugh.
Oh, nice try, handsome. But I dig the accent. Not from around these parts, are you?
She pulled her helmet off, her ringlets of blonde hair falling free. Her words were knowing, but her laughter set Eric's teeth on edge. He glowered up at her.
I could say the same thing.
Between her golden curls, the large black bow on her head, her cute button nose, and big, innocent blue eyes, he couldn't help but notice just how much like a doll she looked.
Listen, if you want to try and take us on, well, we'll let you. But I gotta say, this lot you got here is a little disappointing.
Ruby's voice fell away as she glanced at the group of people before her. The queen was playing dress-up in a gown far too pink. A tiny dwarf, dressed in shoddy armor, sat on the back of an admittedly terrifying armored bear covered in spikes. And the queen's bodyguard, dressed in her crimson battle attire. The latter was about the only one here worthy of the title of soldier. Even though they had two stone Goliaths, wielding what looked like the very doors of their meager fort as shields, the party of misfits was laughably unmatched for the might of the Brotherhood. Her gaze landed on the stinking undead, and she rolled her eyes, muttering the word filth under her breath. Ready to deem this group unfit for war, Ruby picked up her helmet, but stopped when her gaze landed on a tall figure standing next to a hideous dwarf. He was draped in violet robes of crushed velvet, trimmed in gold. And his face... oh, sweet babies! Eric's jaw dropped as he watched the jewel of the Brotherhood slide off her horse, her dainty feet hitting the ground without so much as a noise. She tossed her helmet at Pyra, who caught it clumsily. Then the tiny woman, barely 5 foot, quite literally bounced up to Atlas. "What do we have here?" Ruby reached up, grabbing him by the chin and forcing his head from side to side. She inspected his profile, his hairline, the shape of his ears, and even forced open his mouth, checking his teeth like he was a horse. "A hat, gorgeous robes. You must be some kind of wizard, am I right?" Uncomfortable by the sudden switch in roles, Atlas pulled back.
Arcanist, actually.
He looked to the others for help, wrenching her tiny hands free from his face. Ruby flashed him a bright white smile, fluttering her thick eyelashes at him.
Whatever you say, sweet cheeks.
Pyra's fingers clenched tight around the helmet as she cleared her throat with effort.
"Ahem. If we could return to the matter at hand..."
The adoration Ruby was displaying drained away, and she whipped around, her face twisting into ugly rage as she brought down her club with a hearty swing.
"Can't you see that I'm talking here? Wait your turn, you filthy gutter queen!"
Unprepared for a surprise attack, Pyra barely managed to scrabble back, the edge of the weapon catching the helmet in her hands and knocking it to the ground. Without so much as a betrayal of movement, Ondine was between the jewel and her queen, her halberd pressed against the other woman's neck. Ruby let out an exasperated sigh and used her free hand to push the dryad's weapon away. She returned her attention to the mage, and that smile crept across her face. The tone of her voice honeyed once more.
"Listen, sugar, a face as pretty as yours has no business on the end of a pike. How's about you come with me and we'll find a better use for that handsome head of yours?"
She wiggled her brows as she gave him a seductive wink. Atlas shifted back another step.
No, I like my head where it's at."
Ruby pulled her lips into a pout.
"Oh, well, if you manage to survive..."
She lifted her hand and pressed it against her face, sticking her thumb and pinky finger out.
"Call me."
She flashed him another smile and spun, sashaying back to her horse. She blew the mage a kiss, turned to the delegates and nodded to each in turn before they left, returning to their armies. The body of the unfortunate trumpeter was left behind. Barry moved forward, nudging Atlas in the side. Evan watched the figures disappear on the horizon and turned to the others.
"Did that seem weird to any of you?"
Atlas felt a shudder of repulsion ripple through him, and he shook his head.
"That whole ordeal was weird."
With a heavy sigh, Eric looked back to the others.
"It doesn't change anything."
Evan adjusted his armor, flashing one last glance back to the battlefield.
I'm worried about that crazy jewel lady. She doesn't seem like she's from around here.
She might complicate things, but... Pyra kicked the dented helmet away with a soft growl.
We don't have time to change our plans.
She looked up to see a swarm of soldiers forming a line on the edge of the battlefield. Archers.
Now comes the hard part.
She turned to Ondine, glancing at the others.
Whatever happens, I want you to know it has been an honor.
Opening his hand, Eric began to concentrate on filling his palm with pooling shadows.
Don't get all gloomy just yet, Your Highness. We still have a shot at this.
He looked over his shoulder at the Arcanist.
You ready?
Atlas shivered off the last of his discomfort from the encounter and rolled up his sleeves.
Ready as I'll ever be.
Indecipherable shouts could be heard, echoing off the empty field. The front line of enemy soldiers raised their bows, pointing arrows in their direction. Evan tapped his fingers nervously on the pommels of his knives. His face twisted in concern as he turned to the others.
It's go time, guys.
More shouts sounded off in the still of the morning, and the call of a trumpet signaled the archers to release their arrows skyward. As the shadow of projectiles neared them, Atlas threw his hands out. Pulling from deep within, a massive ball of fire erupted from his fingertips, and he launched it into the air above them, incinerating a large swath of arrows into ash. Eric moved behind the Arcanist, hurriedly scrawling out a modified rune and pitching a fistful of tiny marbles of shadow into the air.
Wraith, it's all you now.
No problem.
The ordeal in the war room had shown Eric that his little shadow bug had pinpoint perfect accuracy. He had controlled thousands of tiny shards at once and never hit a single person. True, the experience had nearly killed him, but by reducing the number of projectiles, he had hoped the strain on his soul would be less fatal. He felt Wraith take hold of the shadow orbs, and they whizzed around the air like tiny bullets, simply ripping through arrow shafts or knocking others astray. It was a sight to behold. Too bad he and his little shadow bug didn't have the energy to make the orbs dangerous to the other troops. They simply couldn't muster the mass to make them cause anything more than a welt. Eric laughed a little to himself as he recalled Atlas's unamused face at being an unsuspecting participant in that little experiment. Goran and Nadija moved forward, sheltering the others beneath the two massive shields. What arrows remained in the sky plummeted harmlessly into the barricade, or bounced uselessly off their hardened stone skin. Eric pushed out between the two when he was sure the coast was clear. The breeze caught the hem of his cloak, ruffling it behind him with dramatic flair. He leveled a finger on the troops, moving to the jewel of the Brotherhood.
You were warned!
He threw his arms out, flexing his hands towards the sky.
Rise! Rise, my army of darkness!
Like a sentient fog, purple mist rose out of the ground from beneath his feet. It crawled across the battlefield with dangerous intent. Where it passed, the earth began to tremble, and a deep, resonant moaning filled the air. Figures clawed their way to the surface, rising to rally to the king. With ashy gray skin and sunken eyes set in pools of black, the figures shook off the dust of the battlefield. They were clad in worn, decrepit armor, and many dragged along rusted weapons of war as they closed in to form ranks. Evan quirked a brow, looking up at the doctor.
Army of Darkness?
Eric gave a sheepish shrug, lowering his hands.
I forgot my line.
He glanced across the way to see discord spreading among the enemy. Panic riled the horses of the generals and captains. Mutterings and dissent grew like wildfire, and what was once a hardened formation of soldiers was now a writhing mob gripped in fear. Sure, his horde of zombies were simply the fey folk and farmers, painted up in stage makeup. But the enemy didn't know that. The hardest part had been finding the time to partially bury them all in the dead of night. He turned back to the Arcanist, who was concentrating on summoning large plumes of purple fog from the sleeves of his robes.
Okay, double the troops.
Sweat poured from his brow, but Atlas nodded.
If we survive this, you're going to get me my own estate and a job in the court with an absurd wage.
He flicked his fingers, and one by one, mirror images of each zombie began to appear in the field of mist. But they were just that, images. They couldn't fight, they couldn't act or move. They simply just were. Regretting his choice to skive off illusion lessons, he pushed further, and more images populated the field. Eric didn't want to let the glimmer of hope fill him just yet, but he couldn't help a small smile when screams erupted from the enemy's side. Chaos unfolded as soldier and rider alike scrambled to flee before the might of the Lost King's undead army. Sir Cinnivar was leading his troops from the field at a full gallop, with Lord Bellemere and his troops hot on their heels. Soldiers in baby blue armor attempted to flee as well, but by order and threat from Captain Lucas, they remained. Side by side they stood with the Brotherhood, the only ones who appeared unaffected by the turn of events. They clutched at their symbols and banners, with Ruby pacing back and forth in front of them, a manic gleam in her eye and a wide smile on her face. Fairly certain she could see through their ruse, Eric hesitated. She was smart, and most likely from a realm that had seen higher forms of warfare than sword and shield. All it would take to change the hearts of men was to make the undead bleed. Too late, Eric realized that was exactly what she was telling her troops as a line of archers took aim. He spun on his heel, facing Atlas, but he faltered at the lack of color in the man's skin. There was no way the Arcanist could hold together the illusion spells and fire off another ball of flame. At the sound of a trumpet, Eric turned back to see a hail of arrows soaring towards them. The spread was wider than before, poised to take down as many undead troops as possible. He had been hoping they would continue to concentrate fire on him, the one who pulled the puppet strings.
Take cover!
He watched as his troops crouched behind shields and surrendered himself to his shadow bug. The orbs he had conjured zipped through the air, struggling over the vast distance between arrows. Goran and Nadija had managed to get their barricade up in time, but even as they were shielded from the attack, Eric could hear a scattering of screams around them. Wraith had failed to intercept all of the arrows. He watched in horror as a silky man he had met in Bozhil's camp fell dead not 20 feet from him. Logically, he understood that war meant casualties. He knew this, but his decision had just cost someone their life, someone who had once treated him with kindness and trusted him. He felt part of his innocence die.
Incoming!
Evan pointed skyward. Eric turned to see another volley had already been loosed and was headed their way.
Wraith, we have to get them all!
Too many! Too far apart!
Then make more!
But...
Just do it!
Eric felt something in his soul wrench free as each of the orbs overhead fractured into smaller pieces. A dozen became hundreds, and a wave of fatigue threatened to floor him as the sky began to hum like a nest of angry hornets. The splintered remains of arrow shafts and fletchings rained down on them harmlessly, but the damage had already been done. Captain Lucas, his troops, and those of the Brotherhood had been emboldened. Pyra stepped forward and thrust her spear into the air, crying out, "Return fire!" Catus, still coated in a layer of ash and makeup, bellowed out a war cry that carried across the field to their scattered troops. A half dozen near the front produced their bows and positioned themselves to launch a counterattack. Ruby let out a shriek of laughter and turned to the others in her charge, riling them up in amusement as the pitiful barrage of arrows sailed towards her troops.
"Is this all the great lost king has to offer?"
But as the arrows struck, glowing orbs of light erupted from their tips. She looked curiously at one as it ascended to eye level. Pyra smiled at the supernova explosion of light and delighted at the screams that echoed across the field. When the tiny mercenary told her his plan to have the magician carve rune traps into the arrows, she had doubted it. But at the success, she had to agree with him. Having Atlas spend the night inscribing them had been worth it. Clutching at her own eyes, Ruby screeched out another order, and a battle horn sounded, long and low. Soldiers and Brotherhood monks reluctantly surged past the archers and charged down the slopes towards the enemy line. At Pyra's command, a second volley of blinding arrows soared into the oncoming ranks. Hardened troops were thrown to their knees as stars exploded in front of their eyes, but many remained undeterred and continued their assault, entering the purple mist and approaching fast. With the arrival of foot soldiers and the threat of arrows gone, Eric let the shadow orbs above them dissolve and slowly drew the sword at his side.
"Bob, give them hell!"
The undead pulled a frightening smile as his eyes flashed purple. Bob lunged towards the enemy, his arms outstretched, and let loose a grisly howl. Few things in this life, or the next, were more terrifying than being charged down by an arrow-peppered, rotting corpse. The troops in his wake scattered like frightened schoolchildren, and Eric felt a rush of courage fill him. He lifted his sword above his head.
"For Ebra!"
His words echoed off the early morning breeze before being repeated by the fey folk and farmers in his charge. They may not have been soldiers, but they had the will to fight for what they loved. Goran and Nadija shouldered their shields and charged at the front line of soldiers, steamrolling them into the ground. The earth shook as Barry, standing to his full height, let out a roar that could frighten the pants off an elephant. Evan let out a maniacal cackle as the bear dropped back to all fours.
"Forever!"
He drew out his knives as his friend barreled off into a gathering of Brotherhood monks. As Eric had planned, the enemy broke around those acting undead. None dared to be the first to tangle with the fabled, unstoppable corpse army of Ebra. Those that were unafraid and unaffected by the ruse were the first to fall at Ondine's hands. He watched as she sliced into monk and soldier alike with practiced speed and ferocity. Even Pyra, who was being guarded by Catus and Bozil, was managing to hold her own against the advance, her borrowed spear striking true. As arguably the weakest, Eric's job was to protect Atlas. He stood sentry over the Arcanist, who was down on one knee, shaking with the effort of holding so many spells, but continued to push himself to make even more reflections. The plan, the entire battle, was a bluff, and the Arcanist's role was the crux of it. They did not have to win the war. They only had to stall in a way that sent their enemy screaming into the night. Every child of man had heard the stories of the King of Ebra. They had been told as children of the boogeyman that would whisk them away into his army if they misbehaved, or spooked by the campfire, by the stories of the old veterans as they recounted their first-hand experiences of the massacre. It was rooted into their culture. Fear ran deep, and he knew all that was needed was a spark to bring it to the surface. He knew that Elias, the true king, struck more fear into his enemies than death, because there were worse fates than simply dying. Eric was not the king, and he couldn't fight his way through this, but by the gods, he could bluff. He glanced across the battlefield, hoping to see Ruby frazzled and scared. Eric was surprised to see her bright white smile as she looked to the sky. Too late, he noticed her bow, and his gaze snapped upward. He struggled to conjure a shadow orb, but it was only half-formed when he felt the arrow whip past him, and he heard a meaty thunk behind him. The purple mist evaporated in an instant, and he spun on his heel to see Atlas crumpled to the ground. At the sound of wild cheering, Eric's heart plummeted as he witnessed the failing of the mirror images. One by one, his numbers dwindled and the enemy rallied. Panic was setting in when he heard the call of trumpets. He looked up to see Ruby leading the remainder of the Brotherhood into battle, followed by the entire company of horse-mounted cavalry. His heart hammered in his ears as Eric's blood ran cold. He had doomed them all. Of Bandits and Bad Magic is book 3 of the ongoing series by Leslie Herron. Tune in every few weeks to hear the latest chapter as it's being written. If you'd like to listen to books 1 and 2, you can find links in the description.
What? Let me just tighten this one down, and there. Now, give us your most menacing growl. Yeah, we can work on that.
What are you two doing?
I made Billy some armor. Pretty scary, right?
Scary? He looks like he fell into a giant bramble patch. Well, you do.
Dude, he's a razor bear. You can't get more terrifying than that.
Razor bear? What kind of idiot thinks up something as dumb as that?
I
think I just peed a little.
Razor bear.
You still look like a giant hedgehog.